Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, it's been maybe 7, 8 days since we last recorded. We're going to resume the conversation that we were having as far as just addressing listener questions in the mailbag edition. We will also give our opinion and have some dedicated basketball conversation after another really, really impressive victory last night over a almost fictitiously good shooting Notre Dame team. And then why don't we go ahead and start by just giving people a real quick kind of bring them up to speed on what's going on with recruiting and where Florida State stands with 12 days left in the recruiting cycle.
Sure. Just a couple things. Look, Florida State is in contention to land the number four class in the country. Most likely they will finish between four and six. Top three classes in the nation are going to be, in some order, Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia, and nobody's going to catch them. They are way ahead of everybody else. So FSU's kind of playing for that fourth through sixth spot, along with Michigan, LSU, and Oklahoma, all kind of angling for that. Still way ahead of rivals Florida and Miami, so that's a good thing. If you're a serious diehard, then you may already know that, but kind of keep in mind we have a lot of different audiences listening to this podcast, and not everybody is a recruit, Nick. So, Florida State is trying to get safety Malik Gray, who's committed to Tennessee, in for his official visit this weekend. We've spoken to him since the Under Armour All-America game, where he said that he was likely to take the visit. Tennessee hired a new secondary coach. We know that Gray, who's obviously from Tennessee, probably getting some local pressure to attend Tennessee, but he also likes Tennessee a lot. I think people assume that he really wants to go to Florida State and people are making him go to Tennessee. And I don't think that's the case. He uses the word we when talking about Tennessee. This is a kid who does legitimately like Tennessee. If Tennessee had not had so much trouble this year, and had not fallen so short of expectations, not that Florida State didn't fall so short of expectations, but if Tennessee had not done so on such a grand scale, I don't think FSU would have a shot at all at the four-star safety. But they do have a shot. We will see if he makes this official visit. Previously, he was supposed to make some, visit, and it didn't happen a couple months ago. So, look, always a little skeptical. There was a report out tonight that Tennessee had gotten him to shut it down. If so, that's not entirely surprising. It's an in-state kid, and it's always going to be hard to pull those kids. Just something you got to keep monitoring. I don't know if he's going to come or not. If he does, I like FSU's chances to flip him because Florida State's program is in a lot better spot right now than Tennessee's is. Other than that, if he does come, you're going to have a lot of current commitments on campus ready to kind of woo him. You got Brady Scott, the offensive lineman, Corey Durden and Jalen Parks, your defensive tackle, cousin tandem out of Newberry High School, Kalon LeVorn, DJ Matthews. That's a really nice group right there. Of guys to have on campus if they're able to get Malik Gray in. They're also trying to get Willie Gay to visit. I don't know if that will be this weekend, next weekend, or at all. He is a real superstar of a linebacker out of Mississippi. I remember watching Cam Akers try to recruit him for quite a while there during the Army All-America game. That's something to monitor or something. I think we mentioned on the last podcast, but they are still trying to get him in on a visit. Also, since we last talked, Levi Jones, the linebacker out of Austin, named Florida his leader. But in talking to Florida sources, they're not sure that will last. And in talking to Florida State sources, they concur because that was his first official visit that he took, really, of these ones he's taken down the stretch. He's going Florida, he's going USC, A&M, Florida State. Now, Florida State has the last visit. Going into all the official visits, Florida State led. FSU thinks that that lead will reemerge when they get him back on campus on the 27th. So, something to monitor there. I tend to agree with that. I don't know if they can get Willie Gay away from LSU. And speaking of LSU, kind of the fourth major one I want to talk about tonight, Marvin Wilson, your number one rated defensive tackle in the country. He took his official visit to LSU. A lot of really nice quotes to come out of that. Look, you should expect that. It's LSU. It's a major recruiting power. It it's every bit the recruiting power of Florida State is. If they didn't hit the visit out of the ballpark, especially with his mom being from Louisiana, you'd have to wonder. So they apparently did a really good job on that. A lot of people think he's going to go to LSU. But I haven't had anybody tell me that it's a lock to LSU. And look, we've been very clear on not misleading listeners or readers. And I think Florida State is still in this thing very much. You know, Tim Brewster went in home, and I believe that was a pretty good visit. We'll see what happens going out of that. Jimbo Fisher, I think, still has his in-home visit left there with Marvin Wilson. So always a chance. You know, a lot of FSU guys are recruiting him really hard. So are the LSU guys. They're both going to bring in great classes. We'll just see. It's if there's a worry, man, Baton Rouge is a lot closer to Houston than Tallahassee is. You know, I can drive that pretty easy. It's Houston to Tallahassee is not as easy of a drive.
Is Ohio State a player for Wilson, in your opinion?
I don't think so. Just not from that far away. I don't see it. I know he posted some Ohio State stuff today, but nobody I talk to with Ohio State connections really thinks they're in it. So that's probably indicative of that. Last two things here. Devontae Smith, four-star athlete out of Louisiana, one of the top targets of Alabama, Miami, and LSU, took an under-the-radar visit to Florida State early in the week. Got here Sunday, left on Tuesday. FSU thinks they got a shot with him. Now, so does Alabama. And FSU is probably the one team, more than anybody else, that's really closely watching Alabama. Because Alabama, people hate when I say this, but it's true, so we're not going to lie to them. They really kind of just pick who they want for the most part. I mean, they'll lose a kid or two occasionally, but if they want a kid and it's in their backyard or in their region, they generally get it. It's like what Daniel Wright told us. Remember when he flipped from Florida State to Alabama? That's just a whole different level. Alabama thinks they're going to get Devontae Smith. Alabama thinks they're going to get Henry Ruggs, who said some nice things to, I think, the Birmingham paper about his official visit to FSU over the weekend. Alabama thinks they're going to get Jerez Parks. Alabama thinks they're going to hold on to Chris Allen, the linebacker who LSU is pursuing really hard. If I make a prediction, it's that Alabama is actually going to miss on one of these kids. The question is going to be, is it a miss that benefits FSU? Is it a miss that benefits LSU? That, I don't know. Or heck, maybe they don't. Maybe they find a way to fit all of these kids in their class. I know you look at it and you say they already have 26 commits or 25 commits. Yeah, but a couple of those kids, I think they're going to cut loose here at the very end of the cycle, or perhaps do a little sign-in-place type deal. Akil Byers, the kid out of Arkansas, not sure he's going to qualify. The Dean kid, the JUCO corner, is from all everybody I talked to Alabama is not like a serious contender to be in that class. They've essentially already parted ways, everything but publicly, and most people expect him to flip to Miami, including me. So there's two spots. They may get everybody they want, but there's also a chance that they don't. And I think that's something you got to keep watching. I wrote a good article this week. I thought, Ingram, I don't know if you got a chance to read this. I know you've been super busy with that conference. About how if you're going to take three stars, and Florida State this year is taking a number of three stars, that you really you got to make sure that they have, I think, the ability to be a starter for you down the line. And I think if you take three stars, I want them to be guys with a high boom or bust potential, right? I don't want to take guys who have a real high floor and a real low ceiling, because that's not good. If you don't have a ceiling to eventually play at Florida State, to me, that's bad. So going down the list, I think most of the guys FSU signed this year who are rated three stars do fit into that idea that eventually they have the talent, if everything works out, to be a starter for Florida State. A couple of them, I think, probably don't. And that's, you know, sometimes you take a kid who, for other reasons, you take him. And we've discussed maybe there are certain positions that you should or should not recruit for. Maybe there are positions that are backups. But I think for the most part, they're doing a good job this cycle. I'll reiterate, I do believe that they need to bring on another elite recruiter onto this coaching staff. And with that, we should probably get into our mailbag session. That's 10 minutes on recruiting, and it actually dovetails nicely here into our first question.
But that did dovetail very nicely. And before I jump right into that, I do want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce who make conversations like these possible, a fantastic product that we are thrilled to have with us and amazed at the feedback that we continue to get, the emails, everything else that pose a Nolcast question or a comment. And then, oh, by the way, I am now a loyal consumer, or very much enjoy the product that is Louisiana Hot Sauce. So really thrilled with the response that we've gotten on both ends there. Bud, to your question, Wesley asks, to your question, assuming Jimbo makes staff changes, at season's end, does he fill the coaching void with someone who is a better coach or a better recruiter? And he specifically references Brewster here as an example.
All right. Well, I think that you do need to add another ace to the staff. I've said that before. I know some FSU fans don't like that. I don't really care. They need another guy who they feel comfortable taking the lead on a national prospect. And right now, they have one guy, and it's Tim Brewster. And they have some other good recruiters on the staff. I think they have a lot of good recruiters, but they have one guy who I would consider an ace, and that's Tim Brewster. They need to get a second ace. Right now, they don't have that sort of 2001 Diamondbacks thing with the Curt Schilling, Randy Johnson. And I think it, like, if you're Alabama kind of has like the Braves staff, right, from the early 90s with the Smoltz, Glavin, Maddox, and a pretty good 4-5. That's probably not possible, but you can do the Diamondbacks Schilling Randy Johnson thing. That's doable if you bring on another coach.
Marlins always had a real strong 1-2 that they could fall when the Marlins were at their peak. But yeah, don't want to get us too sidetracked in the depth of starting pitchers. But.
Exactly. Yeah, we both like baseball, so that could get us very off track. Some of this gets into, does Jimbo Fisher think the issue is coaching, or does Jimbo Fisher think the issue is talent, or does he not think there's an issue at all? I can't believe he doesn't think there's any issue. This team just lost 3 games and suffered one of the worst losses. Or was that the worst loss in program history, or one of the worst? The Louisville game.
I think it was the worst, but point stands regardless.
I mean, certainly the worst in a couple decades. So, yeah, I do think you need to make some changes on this staff. The sequencing, the timing of when your wins and losses came to me are largely irrelevant. Okay, you can say this team improved over the latter half of the season, and that may be true. I think it probably is true, but it doesn't erase the fact that this staff did not have the buy-in and the trust from these players. They did not have this team ready to play. That's an unacceptable risk, I think, going into next year, and you do need to make a change or two to change some things up. But I do think that it's really important that whatever change you make, the staff gets younger. It's a very old staff. The staff needs to get younger, and the staff needs to add another ace recruiter, in my opinion.
But I know that the recent coaching conference or coaching get-together, didn't they have a vote on this, and it was voted unanimously that they're able to add a 10th spot? When does that actually become active in play, and could they add a position for 2017 without necessarily letting somebody go?
They could. Now, I believe that vote happens in April, and so it would take effect immediately if it passes in April, okay. which is right. An interesting question. And I think we have somebody asked us about this, but I don't know which question it was. But could FSU actually wait until April to make a coaching change? That might, at this point, it might not be a bad idea to do so. And here's why. The coaching change you make might be different if that vote passes versus if it doesn't. Because I think if it passes, what you're going to do is bring in another secondary coach so that you have one guy coach safeties and one guy coach corners. A lot of teams already do that, by the way. A lot of teams have one defensive line coach and then two secondary coaches. Florida State as one secondary coach and two defensive line coaches. And they're good ones, certainly. They're not guys you want to get rid of. Now, could you have a shifting responsibilities where maybe somebody moves to linebackers coach and then you have two new guys coaching the secondary? Maybe. I don't know. If I'm Jimbo and I've waited this long to make coaching changes, the coaching convention's over. And that's where a lot of changes get taken place. The next real big coaching changes thing is right after the NFL season, which is almost all done now. And NFL coaches who are out of job or looking to move, first, what do they always look for? NFL jobs. Why? Because there's no recruiting. Recruiting is a pain in the ass. These guys are in the NFL. They don't want to come down and recruit. Very rarely do they want to go back to college. It's one of the reasons why Nick Saban laughed at it so hard until the situation got untenable in Miami and Alabama backed up a truck, right? So I think it might not be crazy to wait until April to see if this vote passes and then determine, okay, do I need to hire one coach or do I need to hire two? And if so, your plans might change. All right. Next question is from Blake Davis, who is in the Navy, it appears, and also FSU College of Medicine. Blake, thank you very much for your service. He says, love the podcast. We love you all. Listen. He wants a comparison on the state of the programs, Florida State and Florida. A few years back, it looked like Florida was way ahead, and he had to assume that Florida would have the upper hand for a while. Have your thoughts changed over the last few years on that? I'm aware of some of the advantages U.S. has, but looking head-to-head over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, FSU now has the advantage. Do they actually have the advantage since desegregation, by the way? Somebody was trying to tell me that, and I've not had a chance to look it up, but that would be a really interesting topic maybe for later this year. I would think 7-3 over the next 10 years seems like a reasonable projection for FSU. When does UF ever get their program in a place to consistently edge us on a decade basis? Looking forward to the Mailbag Question podcast. Take care. Well, thanks, Blake. There's a lot to unpack here. First, I think that you have seen some wild swings in this rivalry. Mm-hmm. And we discussed this in our Slack chat today. And the question was from one of our Slack guys. He said, could Jimbo have found himself in a better situation taking over FSU with, you know, Urban Meyer having the little heart condition or whatever that actually was, the Randy Shannon, Al Golden, Muschamp, McElwain. And I said, well, what if you took over a program that had just invested a lot of money in its program, had just fired a guy who was absolutely one of the best recruiters in the nation and one of the best recruiters we've ever seen and stocked that roster in Ron Zook, and then the coaches you got to coach against were 75-year-old Bobby Bowden and the guy who took over Butch Davis, the old dude, Larry Coker.
Coker. And, yeah, certainly a more sporadic cross-section there than Florida State, who's on the schedule for both. But, yeah, I think that's
at least
very
recruit
good.
Against. I mean, right. That's kind of why true. You've had these massive swings. In addition to, Florida was spending a lot of money before Meyer got there, and then it kind of coasted for a little bit. Florida State went about a decade or so where they were not really spending big time to make upgrades. They got stale. Jimbo Fisher got their ass in gear as far as the spending goes. That, to me, is why this thing has shifted like it has, right? You had Urban Meyer, I think he got out of touch a little bit with some of the guys who was recruiting character-wise, allowed the culture to get toxic. Florida stopped spending. They made a hire that didn't work out, obviously. Partially, I think, because they handcuffed the guy with some of the offensive coordinator choices that they made him. You know, to me, it's like that. If you don't think a coordinator is ready to become a head coach, don't hire. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think McElwain's actually going to, or Muschamp's going to do okay at South Carolina. I don't think he's going to do you know, work miracles or anything, but I think the guy knows how to evaluate talent. I think he knows how to recruit. And I think that he actually had a little bit of something going with Kurt Roper there at Florida, who he now has back at Florida. And if UF's administration had not made him hire Huge fat guy. Charlie Weiss. You know, maybe things go differently there. I don't know. I mean, the guy was like 500 pounds. He had to sit on a cooler because anyway.
It got pretty bad there at the end, certainly.
We will see the level of commitment Florida spends at, right? Right now, Florida State seems to be pretty all in relative to what they can spend. I bet you Florida State spends a much higher percentage of available dollars that it has than what Florida spends. Now, Florida is doing an indoor practice facility. They are, I believe, doing the players' dorms and a bunch of other facilities upgrades now after kind of foolishly taking about 7-8 years off from that. And McElwain kind of openly bitches about this in press conferences. I don't know if you've seen some of these, but mm-hmm.
They have a new athletic director. So they have, I believe he was formerly at Mississippi State. I mean, he'll be eager to spend some of that old Florida money, certainly, and try to make his own, you know, develop his own footprint. And Foley was a legendary athletic director, but you're right, certainly got, I don't want to say complacent, but just got to a point where I think Florida thought they could get by on more of just that name brand than necessarily some of the resources and some of the assets that they had to develop within their program.
Exactly right. So does Florida ever get to a place where a program is consistently edging FSU on a decade basis? I think what history has taught us is that it's hard to definitively say this either way. If you take it, will they consistently be better decade over decade? I would say doubtful because the word consistent. Can there be a decade where they're better than FSU? Absolutely. These things swing fairly quickly because the head coach does have so much power over the program, and it's hard to hire head coaches. You can make a bad hire or two in a row if you're Florida, which they may have done. Florida's recruiting right now is not that good.
Fan base knows it too. You see the good articles breaking down the three stars, and there are a lot of signs of unrest there. So,
do you want to read some of their athletic director's comments? Did you see these?
I didn't. Please,
let's review. Ingram, I'm about to hit pause here while I pull this up. All right, reading this from Thomas Goldkamp, who works for the 247 Gator site. Good dude. Their new athletic director, Scott Strickland, was on a radio show in Orlando, and host Scott Inez asked Strickland if he was concerned about Florida's current recruiting in the football program. The Gators 2017 class ranks number 22 nationally right now, behind three of its SEC East opponents, and just one spot ahead of Kentucky. Also, side note, this is not in the article, but it's factual. Georgia has more 4- and 5-star recruits than the rest of the East combined.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not good for Florida. That's the more concerning stat. More than being fourth in the East in recruiting is that you're the one that the old Gators will tell you is their chief rival, Georgia, is beating you that badly. That's really concerning, I think. So, Strickland summed up the argument many coaches and administrators have made over the years. Stars are not the end-all be-all, Ingram. They're not. This is crazy to me that a program that literally won its last two titles based on just out-of-this-world, all-time great recruiting is now poo-pooing recruiting rankings, but here we go. Quote, "We all see every year, we realize the only thing people focus on is those rankings and the number of stars kids have next to their name," Strickland said. "And every year, after signing day, people go back and look at the previous years and all the 5-stars that you've never heard from again and all the 2-stars or 3-stars that were just kind of afterthoughts on signing day who end up being big-time players." Strickland, the athletic director at Mississippi State before taking the Florida job, pointed to his experience in Starkville. Yes. The Bulldogs, of course, even reached as high as number 1 in the college football playoff rankings during the 2014 season. Their class makeup over the previous 4 recruiting cycles before their stellar run, they pulled 15 4- or 5-star prospects and 84 3-stars or lower. "I came from a place at Mississippi State. We signed a 3-star quarterback out of some small school in Louisiana named Dak Prescott," Strickland said. "Now look where Dak Prescott is. Then that same signing class, there were 2 or 3 5-stars that were the gem of the class that you never heard from. I think there's examples after examples. He continues, just as important as being able to go out and sign kids, you've got to be able to identify a talent. And really good coaches, I think, can do that and trust their own evaluation. So we don't necessarily trust what some recruiting guy says is the right guy. Guess what? I said Percy Harvin was the right guy. And Tim Tebow was also the right guy. And so was Jarvis Moss and the Pouncey Twins and Marcus Gilbert and basically every other starter on those dominant teams they had who were 4 and 5 stars.
All those kids from Lakeland. Yeah, absolutely.
The kid from Philly who Urban Meyer had a vision from God about signing with him. Yeah. Recruiting is really subjective. It's also very important, Strickland said. You have to find the right young people to your program, the ones that fit athletically, the ones that fit academically and socially. All that stuff's important. But just as important as going out and be able to find the key people is being able to evaluate who the right people are and the ability to develop those young people once they get on your campus. The University of Florida is always going to attract good kids. I think we will always have talented kids. I think we'll have kids that fit our program and kids that want to compete, fight, and win for the Gators. Okay. Everybody drink the Kool-Aid now. Man.
Damn.
So I tweeted, I think Florida's AD forgot that he's not in Starkville anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's not at a school like Mississippi State, and there's certainly a whole different set of expectations, and that is just flat out kind of a silly comment to make. But I think probably a little bit of a trying time for Florida fans, because you had this little brief period where, okay, you went and got Muschamp and that didn't work out. And you went and you got this guy from the Saban tree who you thought was going to be an offensive mind and bring back that, you know, very much that kind of core part of their DNA as a fan base of having an exciting offense. And that's in year three and is yet to happen. And there's not a whole lot of optimism when you look at what's going on in the recruiting scene. So a conversation that we've had frequently over the past couple of months, but I don't know if this is quite lost decade type stuff, but Florida is creeping on to many a year of mediocrity here.
And look, I think that they probably are a good evaluation staff. There's no doubt about it. But there's also no doubt they're not doing quite the job of connecting with elite kids that Jimbo Fisher or Urban Meyer have done in the state previously. It's just not happening. What was our stat? That Florida State had 7 players rated higher than Florida's highest rated recruit.
Mm-hmm.
That's not closing the gap, man. And their quarterback that they got is not the Jake Allen kid. He's fine. Unless they work some serious miracles, I don't know if he's actually starter material in Gainesville.
But next question, are we seeing a resource allocation philosophy shift with Jimbo and carrying more tight ends and running backs and less wide receivers? We only took Gavin last year and look to be taking 2 max this year, but seem to be taking more guys at all of their offensive spots.
All right, so let's take a look at what the roster is going to look like for 2017. Now, there were some rumors that Pig Harrison was coming back to the team. I don't know where those came from. We saw some sites try to discredit the report of Tomahawk Nation that Harrison had left the team, which was true. He had stayed in classes, but his locker was absolutely cleaned out, and he was looking to transfer. I don't know if he actually did transfer. In fact, I don't think he did. Probably smart of him to finish out the academics there, but I do not expect him back on the roster. So let's count them out with me. Tight ends, Jeremy Kerr, Maven Saunders, Ryan Izzo, Nasir Upshur, Alexander Marshall, Trey McKitty. That is 6 by my count. I don't think Florida State has ever carried 6 tight ends before on its roster, so that's pretty impressive. Receivers, DJ Matthews, Tamori and Terry, George Campbell and X3, Devontae Phillips is 4, Auden Tate is 5, Nyquan Murray is 6, and I do think they obviously want to take one more in this class because they're still heavily pursuing Devontae Smith and Henry Ruggs, and I think their likely pitch is playing time. Running back, Jonathan Vickers, Ryan Green is 2, Amir Rasul is 3, Gabe Neighbors, your fullback, maybe H-back type, is 4, White Laybourne Akers is 5, 6, 7. and they have two committed for the 2018 class. So yeah, maybe they are trying to go a little more power look. That's fine with me. I don't think they have a quarterback who's accurate enough to be throwing the ball 50 times a game anyway. But yeah, this is going to be something to watch. I think it's a very keen observation by Kelly. Now, is it purposeful? Or did they just have so many guys who they knew would say yes to them who are elite talents at those spots that they said, let's take you? That could be too. I think that's a harder question to answer. You know, I don't know if they started out early in the year looking to take two tight ends, but two emerged. Did they look to take three running backs? I don't think so, not necessarily, but three emerged who are like super elite talents. And so they're not right. going to turn those guys away. Next year, assuming that, you know, maybe a Tate or a Murray or you know, go pro early, or maybe you have like a, I don't know, somebody transfer out to find playing time elsewhere, they'll probably go a little heavier on receiver, especially if they only sign two this class. That's a good question by Kelly. I appreciate that. All right, next, Dan. I was watching Jimbo talk to the media today, and I think he sent this back in December. Watching Jimbo talk to the media today, and he said for Christmas, they had dinner and then they had chapel. This got me wondering as to what the non-religious players do during this time period. Can they opt out, or would that be socially or culturally unacceptable within the mold of how the program operates? I know Bobby had a preacher's mentality 24/7 and didn't separate religion from ball. Does Jimbo lead the program like that as well? Just wondering if you guys had any insight on how players deal with this if they're not religious. Do they just stay silent so they don't ostracize themselves, or has there ever been any players who think similar to Arian Foster that they would speak out or abstain from religious practices? Look, I know Jimbo is a Christian man, just as Bobby was and is, but they do operate their programs differently, right? I don't think, at least nothing from what I've heard, and I'm not there during day-to-day meetings or anything, but I don't think Jimbo is trying to convert kids like you know Bobby said he was literally during his recent documentary. If you are a kid on Jimbo Fisher's team and you don't want to take part in the team prayer, I don't think you'd be ostracized. Now, I don't know how many kids actually don't do that. That's not something I've ever really thought to ask about. But just culturally, I don't think that he would let that become an issue, right? You obviously have the chaplain there, Clint Purvis. He ministers to a lot of kids on the team and provides them not only with spiritual guidance, but I think to somebody they feel comfortable coming to talk to as well, you know? And I think that's a good thing. But no, I don't think that Jimbo is in that sort of Dabo mold or Bobby mold in that regard. Yeah. Like if you watch Dabo's press conference the other day, it was essentially like this was ordained redemption from Clemson's loss in 2009, that they would build all this way back and that God really wanted it for him. I've never heard Jimbo also talk like that.
Baptize some of his players. Yeah, I mean, it's
in Dabo's practice. Yeah,
it's different thing there with Dabo. And you're right, that was a massive aspect of Bobby. And kids would go to church. A lot of times kids would use that as a chance to sleep. But I don't think anybody's getting ostracized. I don't know that that's any kind of concern in the locker room. I do think it's a good question, but I think there's probably a good appears to be a good blend there, and not somebody that's necessarily driven, whether that be for positive or just it can be kind of socially just can be awkward at times if you have somebody pushing something on you or making you do something that you don't feel otherwise comfortable with.
I think that's well put. All right, 16 is Kelly again. Or maybe a different Kelly. I think it's a different Kelly. Would you consider it a failure on the staff if Florida State ends up signing only one of safety Jamel Cook, 2016 class, Daniel Wright, Malik Gray, and Cyrus Fagan at the safety position? One signed, that would be Cyrus Fagan. Two are commits, and one was a heavy lean early. Yeah, I think you can say that. That's probably a failure to sign enough elite safeties in a given class, although I like Carlos Becker a hell of a lot. And to be honest, I like Carlos Becker better than I like Jamel Cook, even though Jamel Cook was rated higher. I think I probably vocalized it at the time, so this is not revisionist history. But yeah, losing Daniel Wright, that sucks for Florida State, but it's Bama. You're going to lose kids to them. we'll see what happens with Malik Gray. Jamel Cook, you lost to USC. They told him they could play offense. They had some other stuff go down there. I don't think Florida State's recruiting in the secondary is an issue right now. That's probably one of the positions that I worry about the least, to be honest. But, yeah, you'd like to see them sign another elite safety if possible. Hamson Nasruldeen is also a kid out of South Carolina commit who they're trying to get, who I think they still have a decent shot at as well.
This is a good question from a guy who otherwise we kind of dropped the ball here. His question has since somewhat resolved itself. This is Matthew Leach, a friend of the show, also the editor of MLB.com. Matthew, always appreciate you reaching out to us. Matthew's question was, is there a backup plan at quarterback if Blackman goes to West Virginia? Would Florida State look at a high school kid, JUCO transfer, or what would their plan be?
The only kid that I can remember FSU being on that actually liked FSU a lot was Jacob Free, who is a kid out of Mobile, Alabama, who is committed to, I think he's out of Mobile. Gosh, I'm losing my mind this late in the cycle, man. He's committed to Vanderbilt. But Blackman announced that he was shutting down his recruitment entirely, so that is a non-issue now, but a good question. And a great follow on Twitter, by the way, Matthew Leach, really good baseball guy, if you enjoy baseball, which I do. Eric Babe on Twitter tweets, at Nolcast, remember you two saying on Nolcast, Taylor would be the punt returner right away last season. What happened? Well, we whiffed on that. As for why he's not the punt returner, I am not entirely sure. I think he should be, based on what he showed in high school. Clearly, their punt returner right now, how do I put this? At punt returner, Nooney is the worst punt returner on the entire team. Agree?
Be tough to see him have somebody have a lower level performance there.
I mean, like he's for how bad everything Alec Eberle is. At punt returner, Nooney is worse. So,
I'll just interject this, but this wasn't some just kind of groupthink here as to, oh, I wonder if he'd be a good fit there, blah, blah, blah. I know you and I both had people who were fairly close to the program and fully expected Taylor to be the returner, at least at some point in the summer. I don't know where that started to change, but there was somewhat of a plan in place for him to have that job. I will throw that in there.
So, yeah, who knows? I will say that, look, there are some players who rode the bench early in the year who later on in the year, we expressed skepticism at the time, and I'll renew my skepticism. I don't think Nooney Murray got that much more mature, right? I think Florida State just made a bad evaluation in not playing him earlier in the year. They didn't put the right guys on the field at the right time, in my opinion. I think that may be a situation here. That it wouldn't shock me if Taylor's a punt returner next year. I think he probably should be, unless you got somebody else you really love. Maybe DJ Matthews could do it. He's extremely quick and caught punts well. During the Army practice, but hey, Levante Taylor caught punts well during the Under Armour practice last year, and we saw what that did for him this year.
Mm-hmm. Bud, next question comes from one Alex Ross. Is Florida State missing on quarterback recruits? Well, yeah, this is a different question. Alex asks, is Florida State missing on quarterback recruits? Nothing against Hoffman or Blackman. Francois was better prospect. Nothing promising after this class with a question mark.
Well, so the short answer is yeah. Yeah, they are, of course. You know, Malik Henry was their choice. We went over, I think, two episodes ago or three episodes ago how it's really hard to argue that they did a lot of things wrong with Henry unless you're willing to use a ton of hindsight. And if you look at how they recruited Henry and understand what they knew when they knew it or what they should have known when they should have known it, I don't think that's a bad take, personally. But it didn't work out, obviously. He, you know, personal issues all over the place and lasted less than a semester. Now you have a guy who is very promising in some areas in Francois, but, you know, not a whole lot of good pocket presence and not much accuracy so far. Maybe that improves. Hopefully it does. And you have a pair now in Hockman and Blackman. I think Hockman is more your high floor guy, and I think Blackman's more your high ceiling guy. But there's no doubt that Hockman and Blackman were not Florida State's top choices in this class. All right, there's no question about that. They went after bigger targets. They put out offers to higher rated targets. We'll see what they do next class. It is a little perplexing that Jimbo Fisher's put three first rounders in the NFL, and yet since Jameis, he hasn't been able. Well, this is, again, I don't want to go to revisionist. He did get a guy who, when he committed, Malik Henry, a five-star, was a four-star at the end of the cycle. Probably pretty prescient there by some of the recruiting services. We'll see if he can get it under five-star to say yes. I think a lot of that's going to depend on, you know, how does Francois do this year, right? If he is a similar player next year, then you may think, hey, I can come in and beat this guy out as a true freshman. Or maybe you can't if you're a 2018 stud. We know there's a kid in Texas. Again, it's Texas, so good luck with that. But Grant Cannell out of at a Houston area is a 2019 who they really love, and for obvious reason. If you go on the Tomahawk Nation Facebook page, you can see he's a stud. Legit all-world player there.
He is, certainly. He also has 2019 by his name, and that's a little bit far down the road to look as your next, you know, really talented quarterback prospect. Blackman, certainly. I think there's some legitimacy to the question. I also think the fan base may be underselling both quarterbacks to an extent. Hockman is not going to be a superstar, but I honestly think in 2 years, Florida State fans will be fairly pleased with what that kid can do. And then Blackman is the one who has the higher ceiling of the two. So I don't even want to use the term like average or above average, two really solid, legitimate prospects, just not somebody that's, you know, top three or four at their position group per se.
And they balance each other well, right? With their skills and their ceilings and floors, right? They're not both big time boom bust kids, which right. I think is important.
Final question of the evening, Bud, comes from Chase Thornton. He says, do you think fans need to expect to be second fiddle behind Clemson until an elite quarterback is starting for Florida State? What is your gut feeling on what Francois ends up becoming?
Well, those are really two very different questions. All right, so let's start with the first one there, and I will answer that by reading a segment of a post from Jared Shanker on ESPN.com. Jared does a good job covering ACC and Florida State. Enjoy talking to him whenever I run into him. So if you're listening, Jared, I'll be seeing you soon. Clemson loses a lot off its offense. Clemson, this time it's the offense that will need to be remodeled, beginning at quarterback. While it has been known for some time that Deshaun Watson was going to leave after his junior season, it doesn't make it any easier replacing the player who ended 2016 as the college game's best. Whomever Dabo Swinney tabs as Watson's successor won't have Artavis Scott or Mike Williams to throw the ball to either. I will have Deion Kane, of course. Running back Wayne Gallman is leaving early as well. I think Gallman was actually a pretty good running back in college. I don't think he's going to be much of a pro. Maybe I'm wrong. Now, the Tigers do have the number one quarterback in the 2017 class enrolled early in Hunter Johnson, who I've seen and I think is not a kid who's going to step in and beat Florida State's defense. He's not Deshaun. He's not Jameis. Watson was the number one quarterback in his class, was also a January enrollee, and was the starter by October of his freshman season. This is true. Yeah, but I don't think he's on that level. Will the Tigers be able to duplicate that with Hunter Johnson or 2018 number one QB and Tiger commit Trevor Lawrence? So we've discussed this on a previous episode. Clemson may have a stud in Johnson. I think they do have a stud in Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence may be the best high school quarterback a lot of people have scouted at his age.
It's impressive. He's a ridiculous prospect.
Yeah.
And he's been that way since a freshman. I mean, he's continued to progress and is a guy that's going to be going to project to really big things. Wouldn't be surprised to hear Mel Kiper or somebody else go ahead and make the prediction that he's the number one pick, 3 or 4 years from now. Or I guess 4 or 5 years from now, being that he'll be entering high school next year or entering his senior year.
So Clemson's going to return the best defensive line in the country, right? I think. And now that Farrell at defensive end has stepped up. So Clemson's going to have the best defensive line in the country next year, I think, when you consider that Farrell, the defensive end, who really emerged in the playoffs, is going to be a redshirt sophomore. You have Christian Wilkins, who is going to be a junior. You have the beast freshman there in the middle. He's going to be a sophomore. They're going to be the best defensive line in the country. I think Florida State's also going to have an excellent defense. Ingram, if I told you that the winning team, well, let's set this. What will the over-under, the winning team next year in Clemson, are they going to have over or under 24.5 points?
My immediate response would have to be under. I mean, I just think that the defenses on both of those teams, and defensive line in particular, I mean, Clemson will have the nation's best defensive line. Florida State will not be too far behind, particularly if you get a fully healthy from day one, Derek Naughty. I mean, what that kid was doing by the end of the year is as impressive as anybody. So I agree with what you're saying, and my immediate response to you would be that I would expect the winner. If you make me take put money down today, I'm going to take the under.
And so my point is, yes, Clemson may have elite quarterbacks on the way, but I do not believe Florida State fans need to expect to be second fiddle behind Clemson until an elite QB is starting for FSU. No, I don't agree with that. I don't think either team's going to have an elite quarterback next year. Personally, I think I wrote this in an article and people kind of went nuts, but the ACC quarterbacks might really go from first to worst in the Power Five next year. The top five rated passers in the league are all gone. You return the Syracuse kid, you return Lamar Jackson, and you return Francois. But none of them were that great at passing this year. So I think the QB play in this league is going to be way down. I think I wrote that article on that on TomahawkNation.com. You guys can look for that. It's debatable whether QB play is going to be, you're going to be last in the Power Five. It could be second last. It could be third overall. But I definitely think it's going to surrender that number one spot, certainly. So, look, Florida State, I don't think there's a team on next year's schedule that you could point to and you could say, I guarantee you they're going to score 30 against FSU's defense. Can you find one?
No. I don't see anything there that I would make that comment. I think Florida State has a chance to really field the defense that we thought they might have this year, could be next year. Now, obviously, you got to overcome the loss of somebody like Walker, and that's not particularly easy to do. He's been one of the more productive defensive linemen over the past 20 years at Florida State. But if you have a full Derwin James, then you could look at really having one of the better units that we've seen recently. So I would not expect – I'm sure somebody will go north of 30, but there's nobody that I look at the roster and would be able to particularly pick one out.
All right. Ingram, I have a couple questions that are not off the sheet. I'm just going through our email inbox. Again, you can always hit us up. That is thenolcast@gmail.com. We have them filtered into an inbox. Right now we have a surplus of a couple hundred. I know we're going to kind of curate those perhaps in the offseason. This one from Jim Colwell, 1981 FSU grad. So there we go, hitting all the different demographics here. I enjoy your Knoll podcast, and I have become a loyal Louisiana hot sauce customer too. There we go. All right. Keep up the good work with the reporting, the inside going on at Florida State. There's no question here. Jim, hey, that was just a nice email. All right, thank you so much. All right, here we go. Brandon Duncan, greetings. I'm a loyal listener of your podcast. Keep up the good work. You guys got me hooked on Louisiana hot sauce. 3! And he is from Sanford, Florida. All right. List your projected starters in the secondary next year. I'm interested to see who you guys think will be the starter label going into the Alabama game. I believe this group can be locked down and cause some havoc with some exotic blitzes as well. I agree with that. Will Marshall be forced to sit out the first half of the Bama game? Yes, he will. Does McFadden move to boundary corner? He might. When is the producer going to start selling the intro? We've also had a couple questions about that. So let's pull up the roster again here just to make sure we don't miss anybody. Ingram, who do you think is going to be the starters in secondary next year? So Tavares McFadden move to boundary corner? I think it's very possible given his size. I think McFadden is very well suited to play boundary, to be honest. Now, at field corner, you got a couple options. Mm-hmm. You could play Levante Taylor. You could play Kyle Myers. This is where it's interesting because you don't have a lot of upperclassmen options, right? I don't know what you're going to do with Marcus Lewis, assuming he's still on the roster. Now, I know he had some surgery. There were all kinds of rumors that he was going to transfer. I don't know if those are going to materialize. Certainly did not have a good year at all. I think that if he's going to be around, they've got to just leave him at one position and hope that he can learn that. Because clearly moving him around as late as they did in the process in ball camp was one of the true errors, I think, in coaching on the year. You know, maybe Stanford Samuels III comes in and competes for that starting spot. So at the other corner, I think what you're going to be looking at primarily is Levante Taylor, Kyle Myers, Stanford Samuels III. Now, in the secondary, Derwin's got a spot locked up. Trey Marshall, I believe, has a spot locked up. Certainly, I think he played very well when he was actually in the game this year. And then you got some other interesting questions. You know, I think Nate Andrews is a limited situational player. He's just not a great athlete. How does Irvin Lane do coming off the foot injury there? AJ Westbrook, you know, does he continue to improve? He played a lot better down the stretch, I thought. Mm-hmm. Maybe Certainly. He could take a starting safety spot. Carlos Becker, another really talented guy, could also be in line to be a starter at the safety spot. I like the amount of experience they have in the secondary, both with the veterans and the young guys. I don't know how much Calvin Bruton's going to get to play. And, you know, Malik Jackson has never done anything as far as playing time. So I don't think it's all of a sudden going to change as a senior. We got time for one more?
Absolutely.
All right. But first, let's talk a little about this basketball team.
Let's do it, bud. It's been a wild thing to watch. And this was certainly the part of the schedule where everybody circled and knew that you would have be significantly tested and that there were games that you were just going to, going to take losses as positive as you might have projected for this team, whether it be 6-8 weeks ago. After a wild run in this kind of six-game stretch, you're looking at a team that's gone 4-1 so far and is going to host a Louisville team that, as we record, Bud, is currently up by 20 on Clemson and has gone on a impressive run and very much looks to be entering Tallahassee with a decent amount of wind in their sails as well. So really critical game on Saturday, but a stretch, regardless of how it turns out, has been wildly impressive, and that was particularly cemented last night after a win against a Notre Dame team that no hyperbole would have struggled to have shot any better than they did last night, and yet they still were unable to go to Tallahassee and collect a win.
Y'all, this team is worth watching. And I'm not going to lie, I haven't watched much FSU basketball in recent years. It's just, to me, sports are entertainment, right? There's no real obligation that you have just because you went to Florida State to watch every single Florida State game as much as universities would hope that you feel differently. Everybody has a finite amount of free time. And I want to tell you right now, it's okay to bandwagon this basketball team, right? It's not football. It's not a thing where you expect them to be good every year. You can not pay attention when the team is bad. That's fine. And most people do. When the team's good, there's no shame in bandwagoning this. I see a lot of people, now you're getting on the bandwagon. Yeah. Last year and last couple of years, I wasn't going to spend my time watching that. Even when they were good, they weren't exciting. They weren't entertaining to watch. It was, unless you really like, defensive slugfest basketball with a zillion turnovers. This year, they're big. They're athletic. They're actually skilled, which is different than in previous years. Mm-hmm. I love watching the Isaac Bacon combo. I mean, that is awesome. Most of your upperclassmen who need to kind of take back seats to them are doing so, and they're buying into the team concept. We have great coverage of this, by the way, on TomahawkNation.com. I think that our basketball coverage is sometimes even better than our football coverage. Just
second to none. Yeah, Michael Rogner does an impressive job, and we'll have him on the podcast at times if he's available. But yeah, the coverage that's available there has always been an incredible strength at the site, and would encourage anybody to go and take a look at what the basketball staff is doing.
You know, so I'm very impressed with this team. And like last night, I was playing poker with our Wednesday night poker group. Man, I was so engrossed with this. That's why we didn't record last night. A little inside baseball here for the audience. I was like late to get in on a number of hands because I was watching the basketball game so intently. This is a really good team. In fact, Inger, let me throw something out to you that I think is a true statement, and you can tell me whether or not you disagree. It is January 19th, and Florida State has not played itself out of contention for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
They have not played themselves out of contention for the number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't, ultimately, I don't think this team's going to be a number one seed. We had a conversation this morning where we talked for 10 or 15 minutes and then had to remind ourselves that we just talked about, you know, maybe them falling down to a 2 or 3 seed, which is just ridiculous to think that that's where the team is. But current record of 18-2, losses to Temple, which is not a great loss, but not a horrible loss, and a loss to UNC at Chapel Hill, which is just going to happen. This team has every possible, you know, anything is in play at this point. And if they continue to play the level they are, I think a 2 or a 3 seed is very possible. And I don't want to say to be expected by any means, but you would have to see them fall off. Now, the schedule does get a little bit easier after the Louisville game, but even then you have really solid teams. Georgia Tech's a better team than people thought they were going to be. It's a really challenging conference, undoubtedly the best conference in the country. So I don't want to say that they're going to be a one seed, but I would, if you're asking me to project right now, I think that this may well be a 3 seed going into the tournament, and that's pretty remarkable in and of itself.
I agree, man. I mean, this is a fun team to watch. Like I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be a basketball expert, right? But I know kind of what good basketball looks like and what bad basketball looks like and what average basketball looks like. And man, I tweeted this and I was shocked because it got like 500 or 600 favorites. I said, look, Florida State has been good before and they've been exciting before, but rarely are they like good and fun to watch at the same mm-hmm. time, right? Like there were years where they were kind of exciting. They'd score a lot of points, but they wouldn't play any defense. And there were a lot of years where they're actually pretty decent, but it was almost solely because they played great defense at a really slow, kind of boring pace. They're fast. They score. They defend. They block shots. They throw down tomahawk dunks on the regular. I mean, I watched it. How many alley-oops did they have last night? 4? 5?
And they're just so damn deep. I mean, that's the other thing. They're ridiculously deep. So
one of the ESPN guys was saying they were the deepest team that he can think of since Nolan Richardson's 40 Minutes of Hell at Arkansas, which is, man, I'm excited about this team.
That's ridiculous. Incredible to be able to make a statement like that. And you watch just the game last night, you get nothing out of Terrence Mann. Dwayne Bacon is not his best game by any means. But, I mean, if you're going to get play like that from C.J. Walker, who didn't necessarily have an incredible stat night, but the shots that he made and the important shots that he made, just an incredible effort from what you get from guy 8, 9, 10. On your bench right now, and it's a real reason to be excited, and it's encourage the, you know, those that listen that are students to go down and fully absorb this. You don't get this product in Tallahassee frequently, and I would I don't even think that I need to do this. Obviously, it's a different atmosphere than it's been in years past, but I would try to absorb every second that you get of this, because it's certainly not the norm, but Florida State is legitimately, you know, one of the best. I think I can comfortably say they're one of the best 6, 7, 8 basketball teams in the country, and that's a pretty remarkable thing.
And they've proven it. It's not speculative. I mean, they're to do what they're doing in this stretch is really incredible. In fact, I don't want to give away future content so people can snake it from us, but we were kind of making a comparison to something in football, and it was really remarkable to have to go back 30-something years in football to find a similar pattern. This might be the best FSU basketball team. Can we say it might end up being the best one they've ever had?
It will be possible. I mean, we'll have to see how that plays out. It's certainly the best team, with all respect to the ACC title Singleton team and the kids that were on the roster then. It's as good as since Florida State first joined the conference that Sam Cassell, Bobby Surra, James Forrest, that bunch. It's the best they've had since 24 years or however long it's been.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right, we are at an hour, and so, guys, really appreciate the iTunes reviews. Haven't checked to see if we've got any new ones, so going to do that live on air, and if we have any new good ones, we will read these. Edgar, do you know we actually added 10 five-star reviews in December on iTunes?
I did not know that. Fantastic.
That'll work. That's you could say like we are the Alabama of podcasts, like when it comes to recruiting five stars. I mean, that we attract those five-star ratings. So 463 five-stars total compared to just 5 4 stars, 1 3 star, 2 2 stars, 1 from a guy who can't even spell the word douche correctly, and 1 1 star. So what is our blue chip ratio there? Let's check this out. I had a lot of questions about blue chip ratio this week as well. So it would be 468 divided by 472. That is 99.15254-2372. Nick Saban ain't got shit us, man. 99.2% blue chip ratio when it comes to our iTunes ratings. But we can always use more, guys. We don't even have a rating in January yet. Come on, y'all. 19 days without a rating. Let's get on that.
Any kind of support is always appreciated, and it's been instrumental in us being able to do some of the things that we have and add some of the sponsors and support that we've received. So appreciate it whenever anybody can find the time to leave us a comment, and feedback is always appreciated. As long as it's authentic, is always appreciated. So glad that we were able to tack on another 10 and look forward to seeing what the month of January brings. But no more natural a tie-in could be found as our basketball conversation than our friends at Madison Social. We've told you all along, particularly if you've got a 9 p.m. tip-off like some of these games in conference play end up being, that Madison Social is a great place when they're on the road. But if you want to get a closer firsthand version of what's going on with the program, have to remind people that Madison Social is also the host site of the Leonard Hamilton Show. So that's cool. Cool little thing. And it's as good of a tie-in with the basketball team as any local establishment. And that comes as no surprise if you know how interwoven the folks are at Madison Social with really the pulse of what's going on in Tallahassee.
Yeah, man. I tell you what, that's a pretty smart move of Matt and them to go for the hosting the call-in show, because the team got really good. Nice work, y'all. That doesn't suck. You know what else doesn't suck? Going there every Thursday at 7 o'clock to watch Leonard Hamilton call-in show, like you said. And apparently Hamilton said that he wants the fans to drink some tea before the game so that their voices on Saturday will be nice and loud. And so Matt So responded, everybody is going to get free hot tea at Madison Social from 12 to 1:30 before the game on Saturday. That looks pretty cool. And you can also get a great meal there, great craft beer selection, good mixed drinks, and some really quality food. I like their brunch a lot. Their lunch is also really good. If you want something a little lighter, they've got a nice selection of salads as well. They've been showing on their Instagram. And, you know, our friends at Matso now are on Snapchat. Have you followed them yet?
I haven't. I was unaware of that, honestly, until you just told me that. I am not. I've had an account. I don't think I've been on Snapchat for about 2 years or so.
Okay. All right. My wife's on Snapchat, so I'm on Snapchat. That's kind of how these things tend to work. Madison Social is on Snapchat. You can follow them You want to guess their Snapchat name?
What is it? Madso.
It's Madison Snap. Social. Just okay. Fully spelled out with no spaces.
Just gone with really that. Simple. Absolutely. They're smart people. They kept it simple.
Have you also, I do recommend following them on Instagram because they have some funny, I don't know if they're doing the edits or if they're just happenstance stumbling upon these, but they posted the other day a is the screenshot. Wikipedia?
Yes.
Funny. This is pretty cool. The Wikipedia thing. Miami Hurricanes football team represents the University of Miami in the sport of American football and hasn't beaten Florida State in 7 years. Like, that's just the first line of the bio. So that's pretty solid there. They also edited somebody edited the Notre Dame basketball coach. The end of his sentence says he's been the coach here since 2000 and hates old people and dogs.
Ooh. I saw that. That was very funny. So,
and the Ruben Day has been on point, by the way. I don't know if you guys saw the latest photo, but a great looking smoke ring on the Ruben that they use for Ruben Day.
Well, that comes as no surprise. The Ruben has been something that we've been talking about since day one of our partnership with them, which well into its, I guess, its third year of existence, third calendar year. So always fortunate to be able to pair with Matt and the guys over there, and just encourage you to keep them in mind. And if you're going to Tallahassee, or if you're in Tallahassee and you're taking part in what appears to be a special basketball season, no better place than to enjoy it and experience it over at our friends at Madison Social.
Well said. Blah, 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 blah.